Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot, part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nekias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Hey, man, I'm good.
Wow, that is not the usual intro. We're going to keep it rolling. We are joined by a guest who somehow fit in a time slot between the jam-packed schedule and multiple networks and show appearances and sideline things and ads and everything else. Monica McNutt, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, friends. It's good to be back. I'm well. You know, I every now and then look at our network and watch the countdown to the Super Bowl and realize that life is only going to get busier for me after that.
I respect one of a kind. Well, we are glad to have you. We are going to talk some W. We're going to talk some Knicks since they seem to be a pretty good team this season. A pretty interesting run this year. But first, on the W side, we had a jam-packed weekend in terms of trades. We had three go down since Friday. Indiana Fever trading Daniel Robinson to the Atlanta Dream for Christy Wallace. Beyond that, we had a blockbuster. We'll start with that one. Jonquel Jones, 2021 MVP from the Connecticut Sun. She is out of there, heading to the New York Liberty along with Kayla Thornton from the Dallas Wings. Connecticut Sun going to get the sixth overall pick, Rebecca Allen from the New York Liberty and Ty Harris from the Dallas Wings. And Dallas is going to get Natasha Howard from the Liberty and Crystal Dangerfield from the Liberty as well. Monica, I will start with you. Like, what was your initial reaction when the trade report came down?
On JJ, I was like, okay, so are they out on Stewie? That was honestly my first thought. And then I actually texted LaChyna Robinson, the GOAT of WNBA coverage. And she was like, and I didn't know this, but they played together overseas. She couldn't recall exactly what year. But Stewie and JJ have played together. Now, she and I were kind of going back and forth about potential fit. That's another issue. But they're not out on Stewie. All signs indicate that. But I love this for JJ, actually. I think she is a great personality for New York. I think the versatility of her game is so unique. She's got great hands. I'm already ready for this pick and roll action with Sabrina. And I actually think she would play really well alongside with Naja as well. So I think it's great. I'm excited. More than anything, I think we saw this when the Sun came up short versus the Mystics in the finals. The talent was undeniable, but for whatever reason, and maybe you didn't see it as much that year because that Mystics team was so powerful, but we've kind of seen it since then. Yes, talented team. Yes, coach of the year, two-time coach of the year. Yes, Jasmine Thomas has an all-star year. Yes, MVP. Yes, sixth woman of the year. Yes, most improved. But they just have not been able to make it all coalesce. So I think as much of a story as it is where their pieces are going is kind of what the Connecticut Sun is going to look like next season, which is arguably an entirely different animal between players and coaches.
Steve, how excited were you when the news came down the pipeline?
Very, very excited. Very excited to speak to y'all. I'm here to triple down. It is Liberty season almost. I mean, it's Jonquel Jones, who was the MVP of the league not too long ago. We know what she could do scoring-wise. The thing I like about it for the Liberty is, well, one, I don't think Natasha Howard got enough respect for what she did to the Liberty last year.
That part.
With their turnaround, gave them that inside and out play, could space, could operate in pick and roll, could play with anyone as far as when they went two bigs. But now you get to do that with Jonquel Jones. So you see that success and, hey, let's make that better. You talked about Jonquel and Sabrina and pick and roll. For me, the spacing that Jonquel Jones is going to see is where I'm intrigued. The pace that she's going to be allowed to play with. Probably the freedom as opposed to what we saw in Connecticut. So I'm curious to see how they use her to start. I'm curious to see what she looks like with that spacing. I'm curious to see how teams guard her overall. Do they go with doubles? How the Liberty counter? So that should be fun stuff. Getting Kayla Thornton was huge for the Liberty. If there's two places where you could probably say, hey, what's going on there? Perimeter defense and can anyone drive and finish? And you add someone like Kayla Thornton next to Laney, you have some defense, you have some glue potential. I just like the fit a lot. I don't know what's going on with Dallas, but I haven't known what's going on with Dallas for like
been a minute. Shout out to Vicky. Sorry, BJ, but ooh.
About 12, 18 months. I mean, in theory, what Natasha could bring to them fits with what they've done, but I don't know what they're going to do. Connecticut intrigues me because I also just don't know what they're going to look like. So it's like, are y'all trying to quit y'all job? Are y'all going to keep working here for a few more months and then put your notice in? Like, are you preparing? Like, how are we moving here? It was a big win for the Liberty. And if they get Stewie, I'm going to act a fool. Saying it now.
Yeah, if they pull that off, that's going to be very, very intriguing for sure.
I just appreciate, one, the excitement from Steve, but two, on the Liberty side, the influx of talent is insane. And I love how much they address the defense in one full swoop. I feel like Jonquel Jones made an all-defensive team this past season. He's done so mm-hmm. multiple times. And so having that kind of size and that kind of range in the front court is going to be a little bit different. And then adding Kayla Thornton, someone that can defend multiple positions and plug some holes. And now if those are your forwards with her and Bonai Jelani, this is nothing about Breonna Stewart potentially joining Frey. And she's one of the best defenders in basketball in her own right. Even if they don't add Breonna Stewart, like, they just have so much more range defensively now, and that gives them more of a base. And this is something that we talked about, Steve, during the postseason last year when they were going against Chicago. It's like, okay, if they cannot turn the ball over, get the offense going, they're going to be fine. They just have to do enough defensively to hang tight. And I think you just have a higher floor defensively when you have Jonquel anchoring things and when you have a healthy Bonai Jelani on the wing. And now you have Kayla Thornton, who can also toggle between multiple positions too. So that's a lot of fun. The Dallas portion, I have my brow raised on. Natasha Howard is very good. And I think with what you saw from Tierra McCowan last season, if they decide to bring her back, she's a restricted free agent. If they bring her back, what they were doing with her later in the year was playing her higher up in pick and roll, which looked interesting aesthetically. But like, if you're going to commit to that with her, you're going to need someone on the back end that can clean up some messes and force some turnovers and make some rotations. Natasha Howard, pretty good at doing that. And so she seems to be, at least defensively, the type of player that you want to have alongside Tierra if you're committing to her long term. If not, though, I still have questions because that is a lot of talent to add. But then I think about the offensive fit. Like, Natasha Howard can be used in a multitude of ways as a screening partner. You can't throw it to her against mismatches. How much is she going to help the flow of Dallas's offense?
Well, I would say this. I mean, not that I don't think Dallas is done. So, because I feel you, like, right? Like, there's still a bunch of holes, sort of, kind of. I mean, I think moving Ty Harris to me is like, yeah, y'all must have some other plan. Crystal Dangerfield, to me, is unsung, and we've obviously seen her do some special things, and she hasn't necessarily found a home in the league. But I still think that she's viable. But I don't think Dallas is done. So it makes sense to have more questions about Dallas than answers right now.
Yeah, so I'm just keeping an eye on that. And again, the free agency period is, I guess, officially kicking off February 1st. Players can negotiate on January 21st. So we are right around the corner. We will have a clear picture of what Dallas wants to do. In Connecticut, I echo what Steve is saying. Like, just where do you go from here? Like, obviously, moving Jonquel, that opens them up to core Breonna Jones and bring her back. But are you trying to build a title contender around Bree Jones and Alyssa Thomas? Like, these are two of the best players in the W. Is that enough to compete with what we saw from the Aces? We'll see where Breonna Stewart.
From a talent standpoint, I would argue yes. I mean, assuming they hold on to DB, I don't think the issue was talent in Connecticut. It was some other stuff. And so some of this fluctuating pieces, Jasmine Thomas, obviously, Kurt Miller. And to be fair, I don't know that, at least I had not heard, that it was anything seedy behind the scenes. It just, for whatever reason, they couldn't get over the hump as a unit.
Mm-hmm. And so just peeping Connecticut's direction and seeing where they're going, which kind of leads into the second trade that they made over the weekend, where they did trade Jasmine Thomas to the Sparks, also traded the number 10 overall pick in that deal. They got back Olivia Nelson-Adoda, Jasmine Walker, and Kiana Smith, got the rights to Smith in particular. Monica, how did you feel about that deal from both sides?
I think it made sense for LA. Kurt Miller is very high on Jasmine Thomas. And although she was all-star, I think her all-star year is 2017, 2018, I think. But she's been an all-defensive player a bunch of times in the league. Obviously, last year she had the knee injury, so she's working through that. But I still think she brings a lot to a group that probably is still looking to steady out there in L.A., particularly at the point guard position. So I thought that part was solid. The influx, to Connecticut. Jasmine Walker is highly slept on. And I know she also battled some injury, but, like, you talk about athleticism, like, big time. Stephanie White, Connecticut is just about to be a whole new thing. Like, they're going to be the Liberty squad of last year, in my mind. Right? Like, that's not necessarily fair, because I think Bree, Alyssa, Dawana, if you keep all three, they do have, especially Dawana, championship pedigree. They've been in the postseason. But they're going to have youth and athleticism that is reminiscent of New York of 2 years ago. And you got to see how it blends together. I will say, and this, I don't mean this to be seedy, but I've heard, you know, Alyssa Thomas is tough to play with, right? Like, she do, you know, exactly what she's going to do. And she doesn't play with a joyous countenance. So we'll see what that looks like. And I don't know. And I've, on the flip side, like, I don't really remember Stephanie White fever teams too well. I remember Tamika Catchings, right? So are any of those players the caliber of T-Catch, not just as basketball players, but also as leaders? I'm not sure. So we'll see.
That we shall. Steve, what were your thoughts when that trade came through?
Kurt Miller wanted somebody he knew. You know what I'm trying to do to help me.
Yeah.
Get this going. That was my number one thought. I thought it was a good pickup for the Sparks. Obviously, they got a lot of moving pieces, but able to get a pick, get a point guard of that type of caliber is a plus. I think my mind still goes back to the Sun, because, again, I think Monica talked about the blend, and you can kind of see we have these things that work. We didn't get over the hump, so how do we kind of refresh this on the fly and see how much of this we can keep? Because it's hard to go from what they have to just saying, you know what, we're done, out of it. The league is too tough to go full rebuild right now. Like, all these teams are making these moves, and you still got to deal with that team in Las Vegas. So it's one of those deals where I'm like, okay, how do we get enough talent in here? How do we get some flexibility? How do we kind of shift on the fly and build around what we've done so far? And I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, but I think that's where I'm landing.
I got you. The Jasmine Thomas pickup, one of my favorite W players of all time. Like, nice to see her back with Kurt Miller. And just to get a steady hand at the point guard spot, I think it's going to be important. Steve, you kind of alluded to the moving pieces with the Sparks. Jordan Canada, unrestricted free agent. Lexi Brown, combo guard, but also an unrestricted free agent. Brittany Sykes, also an unrestricted free agent. We'll see who of the three comes back. But having someone like Jasmine Thomas that can set the table for you, and as Monica mentioned, a nasty on-ball defender throughout her career. Like, talk about setting a tone. Like, I think Jasmine Thomas can do that, provided that she stays healthy. On a Connecticut side, I do kind of like it. Like, if you're going with these major moves, getting athleticism, getting some youth in the building, I don't think that's a bad thing. And from what we saw in the second half of the year for Olivia Nelson-Adota, particularly after the Liz Cambage contract divorce and everything that kind of went on with LA's rotation last season, she was a major bright spot for me. A versatile defensive piece, someone that the Sparks felt comfortable utilizing with handoffs, letting her initiate some up top, using her as a screener as well. I do wonder who she plays with, assuming that she stays. Like, what is that going to look like alongside Aubrey Jones or alongside Alyssa Thomas? Like, I actually like the Alyssa Thomas fit, kind of. Like, I think there's enough passing between the two that you can make that work. But I'm intrigued by the addition there.
Straight backing up Bree, I like it. I don't know if I see the Alyssa part. Maybe. We'll see.
We shall see. On that front, we can move to the NBA side. We're going to talk about the New York Knicks today. 25-20 right now. They are sixth in the Eastern Conference. 11-12 at home. They are 14-8 on the road. Almost top 10 in both offense and defense this year. Monica, I'll start with this. What were your expectations for this Knicks group heading into the year? And how have they, I guess, matched your expectations, or how do they differ?
Jalen Brunson has exceeded my expectations statistically, but I expected him to be a steadying force for this team. This team is better than I expected at this point, but we still got a lot of runway to see where they finish. I think it's so funny because I was listening to Knicks Film School this morning talking about the Raptors game on Monday night. I caught overtime. And I think when you hear the statistics, I think they dropped to 11th in defensive rating. They're top 10 in offensive rating. It doesn't always compute because watching them daily, there's still like this upside that you see, and you see the potential, and you're almost conditioned as someone that's following the Knicks to be like, oh, this is not up to par. But this year, I think that they are exceeding expectations. I'm concerned what the back half of the season looks like because of the amount of minutes that their guys have to play. Now, I would be playing them those minutes too. I don't have an issue with it because you play to folks that you trust and you play to folks that prove can get it done. Quite frankly, the rest of the roster needs to be upgraded. So it is what it is on that. But I do wonder, every time I watch Jalen pull off something heroic minus the Raptors game, it's like, is he going to keep this up? Is he really going to keep this up? So I think that this team, to me, is ahead of schedule. There's a foundation there that I think there's a lot to be excited about. But we got to see because there's just not that much room for error in the East, in either side, really, but in the Eastern Conference.
Nah, that's a good point there as far as the margin for error. I did have one question just bounced off what you said. You mentioned kind of the minutes that the Knicks are playing. And for me, I thought the season took a turn when Tibbs said, hey, these are the nine folks that are playing.
Yeah.
Rest of y'all got to figure it out. I'm sorry. And so that's helped them. And you've seen growth from their bench unit. You've seen growth from their starters. How do you feel like that can be balanced? Because this is the way they're going.
Days off. Like, I don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, and yes, Tibbs has gone to a signature nine rotation. Well, let's get into that for real. Cause for real, it's like six and a half. You know what I'm saying? Like in a actual ball game. And I'm not mad at that. Like, in a perfect world, oh yes, Jalen and RJ and Julius only played 36 minutes tonight. Like, great, or 32, whatever. That's not where we're at. And as much as I'd love to see Jericho Sims in a dunk contest, and I do think there's some upside there. And, you know, Deuce McBride is a great story. Deuce is still a two-way guy. Like, Jericho's a two-way guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love Obi. I genuinely love Obi. I think he has an amazing soul. But Obi is a very elite role guy. Like, R-O-L-E and R-O-L-L and get out and dunk, right? And so I think this, like, vision of folks that felt like Obi was the solution and needed to be on the floor, or Isaiah is the solution and needed to be on the floor, cool. They need to give you a really good 8 minutes. And then you got to put your horses out there that can go and get you a W, because that's just not, they're just limited. Like, that's just, that is what it is. So I think the counter to the rest or the minutes is rest. And hopefully Tibbs ain't wearing them out in practice, because they're going to have to be on the floor to win.
To bounce off an earlier comment that you made, just speaking on them kind of, I guess, exceeding your expectations and the numbers not maybe matching what you're seeing sometimes. They are, again, barely outside of the top 10 in offense defense class right now. Which side of the ball has surprised you the most? Do you think they've been better offensively than you expected or defensively?
I think defensively. Yeah, I'm going to go with defensively. Because, like, watching them, and I don't know, maybe because I'm thinking of, like, giving up 17-point lead to the Bucks, or even last night, and what was, you know what I'm saying, like, a really tough loss. And I think to hear that they're top 10 in defense is like, oh, okay, wow. Y'all are basketball minds. I think the stats don't quantify the moments. Right? So, like, yes, on the season, but there's moments where Evan Fournier is across the lane in a terrible help position. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's moments where the defensive rebound could have sealed the game. Like, there's moments, and again, this is also being with this group regularly, there's moments to me that stand out. And when I think of a team that has a defensive signature, there's moments that support that. Now, Mitch came up with a big block last night, I think. Or no, the Julius Steele was definitely a moment, right? But like, consistently, the defensive pedigree has not shown when it's needed most to me.
I think that's a good point. And I think it's interesting because the Knicks defense that they had, was that now 2 seasons ago? That was their trademark. That was a hallmark that brought them to the table, that brought them to the dance. Last year, couldn't find it. Could not find it. This year, it feels like the moments that they had last year where it was like, why are you overhelping? Why are the rotations so bad? Why is everything off? They've kind of put those in a box. So they still exist, but it's not as bad.
And the other part of those, Steve, is like, because one offsets the other. It's not as bad because, ooh, that ball bounced out of bounds. We got lucky, but give it to Jalen. And now Jalen stabilizes, like, he's going out here and needs to tie or take the lead, right? Like, you know what I mean? But I feel you.
But then it ties into offensively, they're better. So we got more opportunity. We got a little more wiggle room to not just get demolished. So it's kind of fun to, like, as a thought bubble to where it's like, are they that much better? Or is this just enough of what they need to get to where they want to go?
Yeah. I will say, I do think that this group has improved. I think Julius had his come to Jesus conversation or whatever this offseason. I think he's locked in and focused in a different way. I think Jalen is that much of a difference maker. I love the jump we're seeing from Quick and Quentin Grimes in particular. My wish would be for RJ to find some more consistency. I think at Christmas time, we did a wish list maybe. And, you know, my wish was for RJ to win most improved. Like, that would signify a leap. Now, it may be too far gone, but that's the kind of leap and conversation that I would like to see RJ take.
I'm glad you landed on RJ, because he's the player that really intrigues me the most with this Knicks group. Like, I knew what Jalen Brunson was going to provide. I did not think he was going to provide it with this kind of volume to where he's averaging over 20. But, like, in general, getting the offense direct, the drives, the floaters, fighting hard over screens, even if he isn't going to be an elite on-ball guy, a guy that's going to generally be in the right spot. I knew those are the elements he was going to provide. Julius, you know what he can provide when he's locked in. And we've seen locked in Julius for as much as we've seen, like, during the 2 year-ago stretch where he was an all-star. With RJ, my initial question was like, okay, how does he factor into this? Like, he's getting the new extension now. Ideally, you want him to make a leap. We've seen strides with him on the ball, on both ends of the floor. How does he factor into Jalen Brunson coming in? And if Julius is revitalized, okay, where does RJ fit in? And you look at just his basic box score numbers, like, it's essentially the same thing that they were last year. 20 points, 5.5, 6 boards, 3 to 4 assists. He's going to get to the line. The 3 ball hasn't fallen. Like, what have you seen from RJ this year? Because you spoke about the consistency. Like, what are there any particular areas that you're looking for growth for him?
I need him to get his 3 ball online, personally. And I know he's never been, like, not Evan in terms of percentages, but that, to me, was the easiest spot that you saw him fitting, right? Like, move without the basketball, Jalen's going to find you or create space for Julius to work. And Julius has been a better passer this year, so he's going to find you. Since that hasn't necessarily come, although he's still taking it, and I think, you know, shooters got to shoot to get hot and shooters got to shoot to stay hot, I'm okay with it. But in general, I still, to a degree, would like to see more run to RJ. Just to get him going, to validate him on the floor. I think both his personality as a human and as a basketball player is not really too dominant. Innately, rather. Like, you get him going, he's a competitive ball game. He can, like that dunk that he finished to get regulation with last night. But he's not, like, gonna demand the ball. And so for me, I go to the garbage stats. Like, if you're not gonna be the guy that they're game planning for per se, I go to the garbage stats. Like, be reckless on the glass, be problematic in terms of when it comes to loose balls, like, take the next step in your game defensively. Because that's, you know, as good a way to get involved in the action and get yourself going as any. So that's kind of what I think of. He can get to the rim. I want to say he's doing a little bit of a better job of finishing this year than he did last year. I think league-wide, that wasn't an area where he necessarily excelled, but he definitely can get there. So that would be the other piece. Like, get to the rim, finish against the free throw line.
Okay. Steve, what have you seen from RJ this year?
Well, actually, I've liked the growth that he's shown, because if we talk about their big three, quote-unquote, he was probably the one I was the most worried about in the sense of how is he going to fit in? Mm-hmm. How is he going to get his opportunities? What's it going to look like? And to see him have the month he had in December where it's like, okay, he's starting to figure some things out a little bit. He's starting to find the aggression. Now I think it's just kind of compacting it. And I hate to use the word efficient, but just finding his pockets and attacking them more. If you get a kick, attack, drive. If you're going to shoot, let it fly. But just have the nights where we know consistently you're going to get it up or you're going to make a play or you're going to attack. Some nights it feels like you get that. And then two games later, it's like, wait, where'd he go?
Yeah. And the Raptors' size, I think, was problematic for Jaylen. But of the three of those, I think RJ kind of fluctuates with matchups more than the other two. I think it's fair to say. I think, yeah.
Did you have more before I went?
No, what do you have on RJ?
Okay. I don't want to talk over folks. That's all. It's been an uneven year for RJ for sure. Like, I'm glad you brought up the December in particular, where he averaged over 21 points. He shot over 40% from three. It's like, okay, this is the RJ Barrett that the Knicks want. I think for me, I'm not super surprised that it's been kind of a stretch for him to kind of get acclimated with the touches kind of being redistributed. I think the defense has been more the thing where I'm just like, wait, what's happening here? Because I was kind of penciling in every night he's going to be, if not a stopper, very good. And I feel like Quentin Grimes has pretty soundly been a better defender than him this year, which is a testament to what Quentin's been able to do since he's been starting. But also, it's like there have been nights where I'm seeing, okay, RJ, this is a bull. You can't move him. He moves well enough laterally. He's going to duck under this pick, get reattached. He's there. And then there's the off-ball stuff with him. It's like, okay, what's happening here? Because with as much activity as the Knicks require defensively, like, you kind of have to be locked in, and you are not the person of the three that I would expect to have concerns about the off-ball stuff with RJ.
Yeah. But I think, again, like, the curse of every hooper, like, unless you are – all-time greats on the defensive end. Why am I blanking on my guy that played in Memphis? That was
Tony Allen.
Yeah, Tony Allen. Like, unless you're Tony Allen, your defense is always attached to your offense. And so, again, like, to me, engaging RJ would be a little bit higher on my priority list. That's all. And I'm not like, look, I trust Jaylen 100% to make the right plays. And more times than not, if Jaylen calls his own number, that's what the team needs. But I just will be looking for RJ a little sooner, just a little sooner. And that freak hand injury kind of disrupted the flow, and the team kind of played well in his absence, which was also like a reacclimating thing, like all of that. But I just think if you look for him a little bit earlier, just because you know his personality and the other two are going to have the ball.
And even to that point about even just looking at the efficiency statistically for RJ, like throughout his career, he's just kind of been a slow starter in terms of the jumper anyway. And so like you kind of bank that in. And then once you add in, hey, this is a new piece that's dribbling the ball a bunch and now I'm hurting. I got to reacclimate myself too. Like, I think we're going to see a nice second half run for RJ. To the involving him more, is it just staggering more with the guards and letting him have a unit? Or how would you think, how would you go about that, Monica?
I like that idea. I would let him work off Julius. Like, I would put him in some pick and roll action. Like, Jaylen is a shooter as well. You know what I mean? And there's been a shift. I want to say halfway through, but I want to say maybe the first part of December, you saw them take less of an emphasis on transition basketball. At one point this season, like, it really looked like this was about to be a team trying to lead you in transition points category. I think that kind of suited RJ because he could get out and run and he had the opportunity to push and have the ball in his hands. There's less of that, but I still think there's spots that are available to do that deliberately. But yeah, you could put him in staggers to me. I think you give him an opportunity to work off the pick and roll, like just touches, right? Like if he has a chance to attack, if you run up against a team, I mean the Bucks, like, and I don't have the film in front of me, but if Brooke Lopez is in drop, like, RJ's a guy that's willing to go and challenge that. So I just would put him just in more action in general to get him going downhill, maybe less like kick and shoot type stuff.
I probably echo that sentiment and agree. Just try and get him some touches earlier. J. Jalen Brunson is Jalen Brunson, and he can finish a play as well as he can start one. You know what Julius is going to do. So I would say let him get an early touch. Let him be involved in the first part of the action. Let him see what he can do in that part and then get it moving. Maybe it comes back to him, that kind of deal. Just so he feels more involved. That way, if the ball does come back to him, we start running your other sets, he's got that right mindset.
Right. And to Tibbs's point, like, Julius is definitely starting to draw two. Like, that's what Tibbs wants. So, like, let even he draws two, obviously, when he has the ball in his hand. But he also is garnering a bunch of conversation just because of the type of year he's having. So let that work for RJ as well.
That makes sense. Makes sense. On the top two, Julius obviously having a really good year. Jalen Brunson having a good year. How many All-Stars are you seeing for the Knicks this year? Do you think they get?
The power of the market should give them two. They won't get two. I think they're only going to get one. It's any given day on which one of them it will be. And I think they needed to be higher up in the standings to legitimately get two. Literally some days I'm like, it's going to be Jalen. Like, Jalen hits that shot last night to win the ball game. It's going to be Jalen, right? After nobody really having a stellar game, honestly. But then you get, you know, monster nights, whatever Drew put up the other day, 42, like, it's going to be Drew. Like, you know what I mean? But I only think they get one. So I'm not sure. It's going to come down to the wire on that.
It's a fun season for the Knicks. Steve, what do you think?
Well, when I saw that there were three players in the league who are averaging 20, 10, and 3.5 assists, and it's Giannis, Jokic, and Randall, I kind of just penciled Randall in. Really basic, not the greatest analysis, but I think Julius Randall gets in. I don't know if they get two.
Yeah,
I think Randall has an easier path just with the front court, potentially. Mm. I think the math is going to be tough for Jalen Brunson. He could. It's not because of his play, but a lot of good seasons this year.
Yeah, that's it, Steve, right? Like, it's just so much good ball, crazy numbers. Like, yeah.
Pretty much 28, 14, and 5 for Julius Randle over his last 15 games, which is absurd, to say
insane.
The least.
Insane.
And, like, I don't – I keep going back and forth. I'm with Monica. Like, one, both of them have really good seasons. But, like, considering I don't think they get a starter in the All-Star group, I'm trying to figure out, okay, who are the coaches?
That's a good question. Who are the coaches?
Who
are the coaches going to vote for?
Yeah, because they get the reserves. I'm just like, the impact that Jalen's had, and, like, Julius has been engaged in a way that we haven't seen in, like, a year and a half. And I wonder how much the coaches may factor in. Well, why do we have to worry about him being engaged? Jalen's a gamer.
I will say that, as you know, we get different sound bites, whatever, when teams come to town. Like, the stuff folks are saying about Jalen is wild. Like, Popovich was here. I think he called him, like, a beast in his league. What's my face? Dwayne Casey. Was that Dwayne Casey the other day?
They all blend together.
Yeah, right? Like, they just are effusive with their praises of Jalen Brunson. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just not hearing the Drew clips, but I think because that was such a gaping hole for the Knicks, now to have the game plan around a guy that statistically is one of the best clutch players in the league, despite not necessarily having a game winner. Anyway,
like, that shot really got you, huh?
Bro, because it's been three. We've had three this season. We've had three. And I love Jalen. And I love his dad, too. It's so funny because when we were doing media or whatever they call it, not media day. I don't know what the new name was this year. But Rick, his dad, is like, yo, I got a bone to pick with you. So we're, like, going back and forth because something I said on TV, whatever. But I love Rick, too. And I, like, have a chance to pick his brain on basketball stuff, like, you know, off camera, whatever. And I'm just learning so much from watching both of them. And, like, Jalen's personality, like, I knew he was going to be good. I knew he was going to be steady. I didn't know he was going to be this good.
Got you. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was going to say, what's been the most surprising part about what he's brought to the table?
I think the immediate trust. And, like, not that he's perfect, but very rarely does Jalen make a bad decision. Like, it's crazy to watch. Like, very rarely. He keeps his dribble alive. Like, he finds his teammates. When he calls his own number more times than not, it's a big shot. And obviously the way he's performed down the stretch and clutch. But, like, I think the trust that's there already It's just been so impressive. Like, I can remember at times last year, you already shaking your head and the game's not necessarily over because you're like, well, what the hell are they about to run? Like, what is this about to look like? And now, like, it may not pan out, but I trust that Jalen's at least going to get to the action or get a look.
Just the, I think that's kind of what stands out for me with Jalen Brunson. Just the simplicity of what he brings. Mm-hmm. Like just a, it's just a calming presence. It's just, 100%. Okay, at least I know what we're doing. And like, I think for the fan experience, that is something that's greatly appreciated in the fan. In the fan
base, like, Jalen is lavender and eucalyptus bath salts. Okay. Like, wow. Soothing.
Wow.
That's a bar. That's a
bar. I think we got the pod title. That is tremendous content. While we're on the guards, I want to transition to the young guards really quickly. Let's start with Emmanuel quickly, because one thing that I've ranted to Steve about and I've talked about, it's like, why has his name come up in trade talks? It's been weird because I feel like he's been very good this year.
Why is it weird, guys? That's a compliment.
I guess it is. I mean, yeah, other teams want you. That's a good thing. But it's just like, it felt like we want to aim for like future assets to make a bigger move versus keeping the guy in house. And it's like, I understand the logic behind that, but he's good and he's here.
Yeah, but your rotation's at 6.5.
That's also true. But like, I think the early report was like, you can get Emmanuel quickly for like a future first. I was like, that's not a thing that's helping you today.
No. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we'll hear whatever we hear until we get the official Rosemont. I do think that he's safe, but I do think that he is obviously playing up his value and nobody in the organization is upset about that. I will personally be heartbroken if they move quick, but at this point, I'd like to trust that if they do it, it's going to be for a reason that is legit. As constructors, this team doesn't have enough. Is Quick the piece that gets you enough right now this season? I don't even know who the guy that makes this team enough is, because half the league wants this like piece that's going to make them a contender or whatever. And I'm like, who are these people? So I get why that conversation is starting. I think Quick is having a great year. I think Derrick Rose doesn't get enough credit in terms of his development, just being another really calming presence. I know he's on the back half of his career, but like the way that he was able to teach Quick, what Quick was able to absorb, he stays in the gym. And I think it took a minute for that to show, and his three-pointer still can be kind of streaky. He's much better at home than he is on the road. But I think Quick is having a great year. And the commitment on the defensive side for him, like, that is evident. Like, and that, I think, is just going to be a game changer in the course of his career, honestly.
That was going to be my follow-up, if how surprised you were by what he's done on the defensive end this year. Because, like, I didn't think he had this in him.
I think, and I'll be honest, it was real subtle. I, like, looked up one day and was like, wait, Quick has the best defensive rating? Like, what? Because I remember that when he got drafted and we used to do a show called MSGP, and when he came on the show and he basically is like, you know, I'm going to do whatever I got to do to play. Because then the question was, are you a two guard or a point guard, right? What I'm most proud of, just as someone that knows Quick a little bit, is that mindset of whatever I got to do to play extended to the defensive end. Because so many times guys will, you know, I play whatever position, but like that commitment is not there. And so I think when he realized what really makes Tibbs tick and how he can stay on the floor and just flat out committed it, I mean, he's got, his arms are too long for his body, technically. Like, he's got these great tools. And so just to commit on that end, I've just been really impressed. He's been great on the ball. Like, he works well around screens. I think this year he's been better about taking his floater on the offensive end in terms of picking his spots. When he gets in the paint, he looks a lot more controlled this year. That's a guy that I'm just really, really happy for and really proud of.
Well, I'm glad y'all touched on that, because for me, his growth has been the little things, just hammering those little things that are going to allow him to not just play for this team, but grow as a player and extend your career. If you're someone who has that activity and you're rotating, we know you can shoot, but hey, you can catch a pass, drive a closeout, either get to your floater or make another play. Doing that consistently while in some different lineups, different roles, I think that's spoken to him as a player, and that's been fun to watch.
Definitely.
I've enjoyed the Emmanuel Quickly experience, hence me being upset that he could potentially be moved. Like, I had to get that off. It's weird, man. It's weird. On the other side of the coin, Quentin Grimes.
About the only thing I got right in the preseason. I had them 10th, but he, I said he's my X Factor, and then their best lineup is going to be that starting lineup that's 14-7. So I feel good. Let's talk about Quentin Grimes.
Well, take the floor then, good sir. What have you seen from Quentin Grimes? What's making him so impactful? Oh,
his defense is insane. Like, people need to credit his defense. The on-ball pressure, the activity, the little things he does rotation-wise, he gets after it. And then offensively, he just does so many little things. The shooting can be there, but hey, I can drive a closeout. I can finish. I can cut. He just helps elevate that Knicks team by being the guy who can do it on both ends of the floor. And that's been kind of fun, where I don't need to have the ball. I made the point when I was like, hey, Evan Fournier probably is going to start. Silly me. But Quentin Grimes has done the things where it's like, hey, I'm going to execute every night. I'm going to do my job, and I'm going to take these assignments and do really well. Like, I'd love watching his activity, his shot contest, his work on the ball. He's very fun to watch.
He's very fun to watch. I agree. He's also closer to, hold on, I just want to double check something. How tall is Quentin? 6'5". He's also closer to a legit NBA player in that spot than, like, I mean, not closer to. He also is a legit NBA player in that spot. And, you know, on both sides of the ball. Like, that's just, you can't ever take that for granted. Just can't ever take that for granted. I mean, in terms of the quick twitch, the size, the IQ, the whole thing, it's great.
Another bar for my heart. But Steve and in the excited tone touched on Quentin Grimes' defense, but I won't hang there too much. But like, the connecting on offense has been the joy for me with Quentin Grimes. Not just the guy that can knock down shots. They needed someone to do that in that spot. For all the drives we're going to get from Jalen Brunson or from RJ Barrett in the post-ups for Julius, you want someone on the opposite side of the floor or one pass away to knock down shots. Quentin Grimes has done that. But the movement stuff, like, they'll run him off staggers. They'll run him off of pin downs and move the defense in that way. And as Steve touched on, he can attack a closeout too. He just keeps things moving for the Knicks. Mm-hmm. And like, that's probably my favorite part about the Knicks backcourt, because you touched on it earlier. Jalen Brunson, like, he can get downhill against drop and get to his float or whatever. If it isn't there, he'll do the Nash thing and circle around, keeps the head up. He'll find the cutter, or he'll reset, call for another one. It just feels like there's more continuity in the Knicks offense this year. Mm-hmm. And so Jalen's obviously brought the big part. Julius making quicker decisions this year. You touched on the passing being better when he gets to, like, that certainly helps. And then when you have someone like Quentin Grimes that can shoot immediately or catch and drive immediately and then get downhill and make plays from there, it's just been a lot of fun. Like, this is the most fun I've watched a Knicks, I've seen from a Knicks starting lineup in a very long time. I had fun watching their second unit last year, as Steve teased me about. But but yeah, this Knicks starting group has actually been a joy to watch this year. So that's been a lot of fun.
Agreed.
In the front court, it feels like the best year of Mitchell Robinson's career so far. Is that a fair thing to say?
This is another one where I have to remind myself to zoom out. Yes. I have to remind myself to zoom out, and I got to look at the numbers. Like, if they're a top 10 defense or flirting around top 10 as a defense, Mitch is anchoring that, like, point blank period. So yes, I think Mitch is doing a better job of communicate. Like, that's a piece of defense that I think people don't realize how important it is, especially if you're like the center guy, the drop guy, whatever, to talk to everybody else and be able to point and direct and not just block shots, but to be able to move his feet. And this year, he still struggles with fouls a little bit, but he's doing a better job of contesting without fouling and not just jumping at everything. So you can see, like, the defensive IQ wheels turning at a higher clip for him. So yes, this is one of his better years for sure on the defensive end. And he's a guy, like, in a perfect world, he'd expand his offensive artillery. Oh, what's that word I'm trying to say, y'all? Arsenal. There you go. But I'll take what you can get. Like, if you get him at the rim, he missed that dunk last night, which was like, oh, Mitch, come on. But anyway,
Been irreparable damage to you.
That overtime was like, because these are the things that, like, the Bucks, I could stomach, because them dudes over there won a championship and Giannis was playing. Like, yes, the Raptors also won a championship, but that is a completely, I shouldn't say completely, that is a largely different team. And, like, this is the step to being good, right? Like, you close out, particularly at home. That's the next step. And they just, they came up short. Valiant effort, really tough game. I only watched overtime. I got to watch the whole game back before I go in the studio tomorrow. They take on the Wizards. But, like, that's the next step in a year where there's not much room for error. So, yeah.
I got you. Like, I do feel like Mitchell has been a lot better in that drop this year. Tibbs also have him play him a little closer up to the level. He'll drop back. He's just such a large dude, which is very simplistic analysis. But, like, even if you feel like you have a pass or a driving lane, like, that's a lot of body and a lot of arm that you have to navigate. And then the dude can leap. So you can't even really throw it over the top of him either if he's in, if he's locked in position. I feel like that's been better on the offensive end. You talked about, like, the Arsenal.
Well, just one thing on that note, though, Tuna guy, is like, he's able to be better because the guys in front of him are better, too.
Yes.
Right? Like,
absolutely.
The single thing that I appreciate from Mitch this year, the improvement is the footwork. He's staying off the ground. And, like, he's not just jumping at everything and going to the bench with four fouls with two halves to, or two quarters to go.
And then on that, that's a really good point. Like, we, as people talk about drop defense, like, screen navigation is very important. And, again, having Jalen up top, having Quentin Grimes up top, that makes life a little bit easier for Mitch. He doesn't have to jump at as many things because there aren't as many windows being created by dribble penetration. So that's a great point by you. On the other end of the floor, like, you talked about him not really expanding the game yet. Like, he's not going to be taking jump shots. That's fair to say. What he's doing on the offensive glass is insane. Not necessarily new, but the level that he's taken it to this year is wild. Like, he feels like the single reason why the Knicks are, I think, the second in offensive rebound rate this year. The flow of the offense feels better. And even when the shots don't fall, Mitchell Robinson has just been a vacuum. And you can't keep the ball out of his hands. There's so many extra possessions being created from Mitchell Robinson this year. That has really impressed me as well. What's kind of concerned me about the Knicks is just the front court in general. Like, I do think Mitch has been better. You touched on the fouls. Like, it, he hasn't solved that problem yet.
Mm-hmm.
The backup room has not been what I expected.
Oh, as some, you don't say.
You've been waiting on this one all pod, huh?
Huh. What's the problem, bud?
Make me sick. Well, as someone who was very high on the Isaiah Hartenstein signing, very excited about what he could do for the Knicks' second unit, the guy that could be a high post hub, the passing, the cuts, et cetera, et cetera. He just hasn't been used that way offensively. And then on the other end, he has just not been good defensively. And that is a bad combination to have when Tom Thibodeau is your coach.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's been a bit of a revolving door. Like, Isaiah Hartenstein got a lot of minutes coming off the bench early on, kind of dwindled some. We saw some Jericho Sims. Now we don't see Jericho Sims. We see Hartenstein, but not as much Hartenstein. Like, do you think there could be a better balance found? Do you think he can find some kind of consistent role, or do you think the Knicks should make a move for a more consistent backup?
I think Isaiah is what he is. So I'm not putting my chips there. I think there's room for Jericho to play more, and I'm open to making a move. The thing about it is, like, this year, if you ask somebody what the identity of the Knicks is, what's the identity of this Knicks squad? They're going to be tough defensively. They're going to get the ball to Jalen Brunson in the clutch. And Julius Randle is going to be powerful, right? Like, if you are not tough defensively, 9-man rotation down to 6.5, like, that's just, it just is what it is. I think Isaiah, too, is, like, he's more of that finesse for kind of vibe. You know what I mean? Like, he just, the matchups don't necessarily work. He's not really been put in a position to highlight his passing. Okay, so if you decided to do that, then you're taking the ball out of whose hands? Like, I'm not taking the ball out of Jalen's hands. I'm not taking the ball out of Quick's hands the way that he's playing this year. And Julius is going to have the ball when he's on the floor. So, like, by no fault of his own, like, it just the scheme doesn't really play to his strengths. And to me, he's not a player that you rework the whole scheme to build around. Like, no. I do think that there's more minutes for Jericho, just as a guy that could do the same kind of things that Mitch does. He's a monster inside. Now, he's got a learning curve, obviously. He's younger. But I would look to find more minutes for Jericho before I jumped up and down about Isaiah.
I saw Julius and Obi play together a couple times here recently, and I was like, oh, this man is searching. I think the problem for Hartenstein is just lineup-wise, building on that, who do you play him with? And then, you know, if he's playing next to Obi, who do you want in pick and roll?
First of all, why would you have both of them on the floor ever? It's not a thing.
Oh, we got there.
No.
But then if he's off the bench, he's with RJ. So it's like RJ's going to do stuff. How do we do that? Now he's spaced. If it's just, who's his partner? Like, to me, Jericho Sims played his way in, but there's only so many minutes to go around. So his activity and energy can only go so far. I just don't know how they can unlock what Hartenstein does, especially with the defensive end of the floor being what it is.
Guys. Yeah. No, it has not been what it was last year. And so, I just have to take the L. Like, I thought this was going to be a really good,
And it's okay. It's okay. To be fair, it probably works in last year's group. Because last year's group was also rife with indecision and Julius dribbling too much. Right? So, oh, cool. Another guy that can pass or go off the dribble one-on-one if he has the right matchup. Great. This year, the command that Jalen has, the simplification of Julius's game, like the hierarchy that's been established, cool, bro. You can do that. That's not what we need from you. So that's where we are.
That's an excellent point. I also want to point out, Monica Minette, you are a huge part of Dunker Spot history. I think when she was on our 100th episode, first episode after the 2-year anniversary, and you are the first person to get Nikias to take an L on the podcast.
Wait a minute.
It's unbelievable.
This is a terrible bit. What do you mean?
Wow, historic. I'm honored.
Wow.
That's my acceptance. Yeah.
We had to save the good stuff for you, apparently. I don't know. But no, the front court partner point is a good one because, Tibbs has tried to play him, and we've seen him with Mitchell a little bit. We've seen him and Jericho together a little bit. And, Isaiah Hartenstein at the four, that's just not what he does. Part of what accentuates him and the passing ability in particular is that, oh, you're bringing the other five out to the perimeter now. Because if you give him free reign to flow into handoffs or to pick out cutters, he's going to do that. He's one of the best passing big men in the sport. If he's at the four, that's a wing guarding him. Mm-hmm. And that's just a lot different. And, as both of you have alluded to, playing him and Obi together defensively is probably not going to be super tenable, especially if Tibbs is your head coach. And Isaiah Hartenstein has attempted more threes. They have not gone down at a high clip. That's just naturally not his game. So weird fit. Disappointing at the impact or lack of impact that he's had with this Knicks group. Tad bit unfortunate, but that is okay. To zoom out for a bit, I guess we can cap it here. As of today, heading into Tuesday night's slate of action, the Knicks are the sixth seed. They are very solidly a playoff team. They will be facing the Milwaukee Bucks right now. But let's just say the Knicks snag one of the top six seeds in the East. How do you feel, Monica, about their playoff prospects? What would you think would be their most ideal matchup?
Okay, hold on. Let me get my standings up. Woo, chap. Ideal matchup. Not the Raptors. Please, not the Raptors, because them diamonds. Oh, God. Although, if you get... I don't know what the Raptors are going to do. Nothing would surprise me this season. If the Raptors rattle off some crazy run and then end up... Nothing would should surprise me this season. I promise I can talk. All right, so... golly.
Tough, right?
Their best matchup... Philly?
Really?
I'm intrigued.
I'm it's between Philly and Cleveland. Because... to me, and I would love to dig into the stats on this. Maybe I'll try to look into this tomorrow. Mitch plays up when he's got to go against a big body. So, if he's locked in and engaged, I want all of that. Jalen, to me, is not going to be Like, he's not going to struggle with necessarily the size of what's Quick's twin over there, Tyrese. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and if you decide to put Tobias Harris on Jalen just to disrupt, Quick is playing well. Quentin is legit. You got to deal with him. And I don't think there's not really a good match for me and Philly in terms of Julius. So I'm inclined to say Philly. I mean, you could make a similar argument with Brooklyn, but like, don't nobody want to deal with KD. Like, please. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, no chance. So I think Philly or Cleveland, I think my concern, if it were to be Cleveland, is I think they've got a lot of fast guards. And because of the minutes that the Knicks have to play, like, that's just a lot of up and down, a lot of movement. And I think, although Evan Mobley's kind of been a little iffy this year, like, the double whammy of Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, whether it's Mitch and Julius or Isaiah and Obi, whoever, like, that's just tough to deal with in the backcourt, or in the frontcourt, I should say. And not to sneeze at Joel at all. Like, of course, every matchup would be a challenge, but I do think there's something there in terms of an opportunity, perhaps, for the Knicks.
To that point, the Christmas matchup was a lot of fun before things kind of took off in that fourth quarter. But, because now I'm thinking about Philly, because like my initial thought was like, okay, Cleveland's probably going to be the one. Like, I think it's going to be either up in the level of dropping back or just dropping back, and that's going to open up floaters and stuff for Jalen to kind of dictate action. In terms of wanting to grind things down, like, Cleveland just plays at a snail's pace for whatever reason, despite the personnel that they have. And, like, I think if the Knicks want to get into a dogfight, like, okay, cool, we're just here then. We don't have to worry about establishing what we do. Like, this is just our wheelhouse, and that's going to be fine. The Philly thing is interesting, though, because the matchup point is a good one. Like, unless they commit to, and I think I was listening to the Low Post a little bit earlier, and he was talking about, Zach was talking about Doc Rivers experimenting with different lineups and maybe bringing Tyrese off the bench. Like, that would, I think that would have to be a Tyrese comes off the bench series, and then you start D'Anthony Melton and Harden.
Because otherwise, good for them. Yeah, I forgot about D'Anthony Melton. You're right. D'Anthony Melton's been good for him. But go ahead, I'm continue.
Yeah, I think you would have to start Melton in that series, because otherwise, like, even then, like, if I, now I'm like thinking through it live, like, there could be some interesting cross matching, because, like, I think if you got Knicks Sixers, non-zero chance we see Harden on Julius, just because of the post ups, and that's the one thing that James Harden can do.
Now, I'm not going to act like Philly, there's not some problems in terms of defending Philly. Joel Embiid is a beast, right? Like, runner-up MVP two times the past two seasons, whatever. But I just think that there are spots for the Knicks to excel. Right? Like, you know, nobody's ever concerned about James Harden defending. Whatever. Julius, to me, could be a guy. Like, if you get, you know, you buy some minutes off of Jericho Sims just for the sake of the physicality in that ball game, like, if Jalen is steady, I just think that one's interesting.
No, I got you for sure. Like, that, the second unit battles are going to be, like, that could be a swing for New York, depending on how they stagger those lineups. Steve, you have your thinking face on. Who do you think is the
thinking face?
Well, no, these are some interesting ones. My Cleveland, I like because of the tempo. I think they could get Cleveland in the mud. And I think if you can just try and figure out one of those guards, you got a chance. The only reason I don't like it, it's a lot of size that they have.
I don't like it. Yeah.
And I don't know if I love Julius against that size in that matchup. And the fact that Cleveland's would be like, we're not doubling. We have two very tall people. Figure it out. So I don't like that aspect, but I think you could get them in the mud. I had an unpopular one.
It's going to be Milwaukee, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my only thought process, and I don't, the other, well, my concern with Milwaukee is just, can Julius be effective against them? But if Brooks going to be in a drop, I can totally see New York just being like, cool, we're going to take all these shots. Jalen's going to take it, Quick take it, everyone take it. And then defensively, can we just figure out one of them? Giannis, have a blast.
I hear you on that, but I think you're disrespecting Brooke.
The problem is you'd have to put Mitch on Brooke, and Brooke would then probably hit threes like he did last time they played.
Brooke and drop is not like a slouch. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh no, he's my defensive player of the year.
That's what I'm saying. Just, like, I think you're disrespecting Brooke. Cause then you also need everybody to have their most efficient shooting game. Like, you're just going to keep taking these shots. And if Drew Holiday is bothering Jalen Brunson all night, I don't want it. I don't want it.
I told you it'd be unpopular. I don't want it. All right. Do I circle back to the Nets then?
Yeah, talk to me about the Nets. Because I could actually subscribe to this.
And we just do team defense, throw everyone at KD and hope. hope we can bother Kyrie enough and make the other guys make plays.
Yeah, and make Julius put Nick Claxton. Although Nick is really having a good year, he's improving a lot. But that used to be a good matchup for Julius because didn't have the girth. Even though he had the length, Julius was more physical. The city would be lit. I would be here for it. for that reason only.
Oh boy, the Knicks just throwing out the not you game plan against Kevin Durant would be fun.
Basically.
Oh man. Yeah. I figured you were gonna say Milwaukee. And I was like, you know what? The drop point, I understand it. And then I was like, oh snap, that is right, Drew Holiday. And then that reminds me of the earlier regular season matchup where Jalen was on the absolute heater to kick off the year, and then it was just 40 minutes of Drew and Javon Carter. And it's like, oh. Well, this is unpleasant.
Very unpleasant. And God, please, the corner threes from the Bucks. Oh, Jesus.
And honestly, to Monica's point, literally, Jalen Brunson was losing his mind, and Brooke was like, cool, I'll come contest it a little bit.
They're not going to call every foul. Like, I'm going to whack you a few times. It's fine.
Like, oh, you're going to have to make 80% of these, huh? Well, you have your day.
Exactly.
I guess on the flip side, then, is Milwaukee the worst matchup that the Knicks could get, in your opinion?
I told you the Raptors are the worst matchup.
I'm not going to say the Raptors aren't a play-in or a playoff team. I don't think the Raptors are going to finish highly enough to where a Knicks matchup could happen.
I hear
so
you.
I guess I just kind of just moved them to the side. I mean,
unless they all was in the play-in together, which, you know, I don't. I had Miami the other night versus a Giannis-less Bucks squad. And whatever you say about Miami on paper is whatever you say. But come March, you always looking at, like, what are they doing? So, like, just perfect world, yes, the Knicks are into the top six. But there's also a very real world where they're a game and a half out, you know what I'm saying? Like, and you do 7-10 Raptors, like.
Actually, I'm going to reform my answer. Their worst matchup is the play-in, just in general. They got to avoid the play-in. You tell me. We got to deal with Miami playing zone, or we got to deal with Atlanta again, or here's DeMar DeRozan, or hey, Toronto, what's up? But nah, they need six.
Absolutely got to avoid the play-in. You got to avoid the play-in, for sure. It's hard, y'all. And like, there's a part of me as someone who covers the sport, someone who played the sport, like, I appreciate that when we're asked to pick a team, it's not like you're picking this team because the margin between the two teams is a chasm. No, it's hard. And winning is hard, and it's draining, and it's taxing, and there's just not that much wiggle room this particular season.
That's pretty true. To that point, New York in six, they are three games behind Philly in the fourth seed. They're a game ahead of Miami for the play-in. So, like, literally by Friday, they could be right at the play-in just that quick.
Yeah, it's. Wait, what was your worst matchup, Nikai, or best?
I think best matchup, like I lean Cleveland for best matchup.
Okay.
Worst matchup for them is between Brooklyn and Milwaukee for me. Like I would.
I mean, like, I kind of think it would be Boston over.
It's Boston. Boston. It's Boston for me. Yeah,
if they slide to eight, yeah, that's just tough. I guess just within the two, I'm looking at the 2-5 range since they're all.
Got it.
I think a game or half a game from each other. So within that four team group, like if I had to rank it, probably, I guess, best matchup to worst, Cleveland, Philly, Brooklyn, and then Milwaukee, I guess would be the worst one. Cause I just think the screen navigation that Milwaukee can throw, and in addition to the size, like you will get all the intermediate shots you want. But if you are forced to kick out, that's going to be kind of tough. And then on the other end, Brook Lopez can stretch you out, and then Giannis is just a battering ram, and that's just kind of tough. So I think that's where I land. But again, if the cap it here, like we say the Knicks make the playoffs, like how far do you think does this feel like a second round team to you? Do you think there's dark horse conference finals run here? Or what do you think of the Knicks ceiling as currently constructed?
No, I don't think there's a dark horse conference finals run. Okay. Unfortunately. I would be pleasantly surprised and I would love it. But I still think they are, and RJ Barrett as a legitimate most improved kind of candidate, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're still a 6'7" version of Quentin Grimes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're still a piece away, I think, to go that deep, particularly in the playoffs. Like, we're talking about minutes now, more minutes, more travel, shorter turnaround. I don't know if they got that much juice.
I got you. Steve, what about you? Do you think they can get out?
I see a 6-game series.
A singular 6-game series, huh?
Hard fought 6-game series. They're 11-12 at home, Nekias.
Yeah, that's not great.
But they're one of three teams with 14 or more runs on the road. Explain.
Yeah, let's go.
I don't understand. It's Boston, Brooklyn, the Knicks with all those road wins. And then all the sub 500 home teams are teams Nekias love.
Ah, I see. Do we count the Brooklyn home games as road games?
Yes. They're not at the Garden.
Now, yes. Before, Barclays was full of Knicks fans. I was hot. And that was my scout. So I was trying to double win.
Good times. All right. Well, then, Monica, one question for you. We'll let you get out of here into your extremely busy schedule. Didn't mention it at the top, but Maya Moore officially retired from the WNBA. You've had some Big East battles with Maya throughout your collegiate career. Just your thoughts or any memories from the Maya Moore experience?
We should have beat them my senior year, and then I think my life would have been different. But I got a good life still, so it's fine. Should have beat them in the NCAA tournament in Philadelphia. I think about that randomly at times. We were up, y'all. We were up with like 2-3 minutes to go. We were up 6. Anywho, that's neither here nor there. Maya was a machine. I just remember at one point being like, did she stop? Like, she's the same level of energy the entire game. Like, everybody else is exhausted. She just doesn't stop. She was so strong. I mean, I wasn't surprised by the announcement. I think this has been a long time coming. She's done incredible things off the court. A shout out to her and her family and her husband. But yeah, like, what an error. I mean, you talk about going out winning. Ain't nobody do it better.
Yeah, that's a send-off for the ages. Just on the W front, basically 18-6-3 for a career that kind of undersells how good she was. Four-time champion, MVP in 2014. She was the 2011 Rookie of the Year. 6 All-Star appearances, 7 All-WNBA appearances, 2 All-Defensive Teams. The collegiate career was insane for Maya. Actually, I'll toss this to both of you before we get out of here. Where I start with you, Monica. Where do you have Maya in the hierarchy of like all-time greats for women's basketball?
I'm pretty sure she's top 10 for me. I gotta think about my W hierarchy. I mean, like, I don't necessarily know that I'm championship only person because she got plenty of rings. She's definitely in my top 10 though, for sure. I probably could whittle. Can I squeeze her in? Do I see her in my top 5? I got to get my history book out before I can answer the top 5, but definitely in my top 10.
Okay. Steve, what about you?
Same. Top 10.
She's such a fascinating case because, like, we're talking about, what, 8 years in the W?
Mm-hmm.
And she accomplished that much. So sure. So it's just, like, at her best, like, I don't know how many players were better when she was at her peak.
Yeah, agreed.
Top 10 sounds right. I guess for me, it would just be like, okay, so who are the 12, 13, 14-year W players in their resumes, et cetera, et cetera? And, like, where does Maya fall into that? But she was an absolute baller.
I mean, just a legacy to behold, right? Like, I'm fortunate to have played against her, fortunate to have covered her. If she attacks the rest of life the same way that she attacked the sport and obviously freeing her husband, like, she'll be the president in about 10 years. So it's great.
Sounds about right. Well, then, Monica, thank you for joining us. Where can the people find, if you have enough time to tell the people all the
places? Oh, my gosh, but, please. You know. I don't know. I'll be on your TV screen kind of often after the Super Bowl on various shows. Although, if you do listen to radio broadcasts, I've got, for my local New Yorkers, if you're listening, I'm joining the Knicks as a radio analyst. I'm super excited about. I'm on my first calls this weekend versus Atlanta and Toronto. And then next Saturday, I've got ESPN Radio Lakers at Boston. Trying to get my get back in my analyst game, y'all. I mean, TV talking is fun, but like the games are where my heart is.
There we go. Listen to Monica. Watch Monica. You won't have much of an excuse. She'll be on 17 different channels at once. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you have not already. We're having fun discussions in there. Join the Dunker Spot watch parties, lots of analysis and lots of antics, dairy products, shared tweets. It's all kind of weirdness. We have fun in there regardless. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
I'm hungry.